Right. And then we're also going to have four people from the award-winning play, Mr. Burns, a post-electric play. Yes. What happens when all electricity goes out and there's nothing to do but talk about Simpsons episodes? Yes. We're going to have four people from that presentation in the studio right after Brittany. Okay.
And we are Digital Village. My name is Doran Behrens.
My name is Rick Allen. And we are joined in studio live, unlike Brittany. Mm-hmm. We have live people here. This is a group that I happened to see this show, whatever, 3 days ago maybe, nights ago. And the show is going on at the Sacred Fool Theater. It's a great name and a great great space, by the way.
Thank you.
Mr. Burns, a post-electric play. And we are joined by Brian Williams, the producer. Raise your hand, Brian.
Brian Wallace.
Brian Wallace, the producer. Jamie Robledo. Did I get
close
that right?
Enough. Yeah. My uncle says that. Jamie Robledo, yeah.
Robledo. Yes. Thank you, Jamie. Eric Curtis Johnson.
Got it.
Who plays a couple of roles, and Dagny Kerr, who plays a couple of roles.
Yeah.
And we'll get into the couple of roles later. Mr. Burns is kind of a, what is it, a catastrophe? Is it a...
Hopefully not.
I mean, no, the play itself is not a catastrophe, right? But it's an apocalyptic play that has so many levels to it. It's unbelievable. So is it a comedic drama or is it dramatic comedy? What would
yes.
you call?
I think it would be both. It's a comedic drama operetta.
Yeah. Well, what's cool? I really like this about the play is you travel with the audience travels through time with you because it's an evolutionary. There's an evolution going on. It travels through time. And what's great about Sacred Fools? I love the theater. What's great about Sacred Fools is that they have three spaces in the theater, and what happens is after Act One, the whole audience is transported to Space Two, and then after Act Two, we are transported to Space Three, which is the huge stage, and every space has a little different feel to it. Okay, so. What gets me is that it's kind of a post it's post electric. In other words,
yes.
Why did electricity go out again? Was it Russian bots?
It could be. It's never specified in the text exactly what happened.
Okay.
What we're told is that the power grid has failed, causing the nuclear reactors to melt down, and that's what is the apocalyptic event,
right.
which has taken place right before the events of Act One.
Right.
And so Act One takes place with a group of survivors gathered around a campfire. Telling stories of what they remember of television and of pop culture,
right?
And of a specific episode of The Simpsons.
I mean, what's the worst part of that is there's no more TV.
Obviously.
I'm sorry. I mean, I have my phone and I can go on the internet anytime I want, except not in your world.
Right. That is the bulk of the setup of the story.
Yeah.
There is no more television. What do we do?
Well, you know, and what's cool is instead of, I mean, what's kind of scary about this is that there's no zombies or plagues or brute survival. It's just like, okay, everything's failing. Well, let's talk about Mr. Burns, because, you know, Mr. Burns in The Simpsons, which is the name of the show, and we see why, because, you know, he's evil and he doesn't care as long as he's making money. He would rather see the sun blocked out than him not making money, right?
Yep.
And I had no idea how many power plants there were in the United States until I saw this play and start reading about it. I'm going, there are no regulations. What do we do? I mean, that's what's scary about it. It's not zombies. It's, you know, it's not brute stuff, although there's that's what we're afraid of.
Yeah.
What is the essence? I mean, how do you feel that the essence of this play is related to the stories that people have to tell to remember what it was like before electricity went off?
Well, the essence of the story really is about that. It's about how the stories carry on. I mean, there is the setup of the world. You're right. There's no zombies. There's no crazy sci-fi other than the power grid has failed. Their survival is about avoiding the nuclear fallout from nuclear reactors. You know, we've done stories about the zombies. You've done stories about, you know, nuclear attacks. But this story, the world is about avoiding the nuclear fallout. But the story itself is really about how culture carries on through that.
Through stories.
Through the stories. Through stories without technology. Through the fall of technology and how pop culture still survives.
So there is a positive aspect to this. As scary as this idea is, and it's very funny, by the way, and there's some great musical.
Yes.
Musical pieces. I mean, we're like bopping to the fact that we don't have electricity anymore.
Yeah. It's not a musical in itself, but the first act is just strictly a play, and the second act we kind of go to a musical, and the third act is full blown operetta.
Well, the second act evolves into a few years later when these people that were all just telling stories and, oh, remember The Simpsons? Oh, I remember that one episode. It's kind of based on Cape Fear, which is one of my favorite Simpson episodes.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
because
great.
It's so deep. Yeah. And it's like, we have no control over what this person is going to do to us. In case you haven't seen Cape Fear, either the original with Robert Mitchum or the latest one with De Niro, it's like, oh my God, we have no power over this guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Be he Sideshow Bob or Mr. Burns.
Mm-hmm. and that is a kind of a point. Another point of the show is that character, how he evolves through the stories to not only become the villain that he is in the original episode, but how that villain kind of represents the greater problems that caused the downfall of society.
Right, right. Oh, that's so good. Okay. It was Anne Washburn wrote the original. I had no idea that this played in New York for a while and overseas. Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it was in London for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
It's and had its own Wikipedia page.
I just found that out today.
yeah. They did it in D.C. and New York, and it's done the college circuits a lot. A lot of colleges have picked it up. It's a good story, and it's a good play that has a lot of variety for I think educational purposes for learning.
Yeah.
But perhaps we're the first people to do it in three different spaces.
Mm-hmm. Possibly.
Oh, I don't know.
I know others who have done the first act outside, which is it's set outside, set in a campfire, and the second act inside. But I don't know if anyone has done it in three completely different spaces.
It's wonderful. I mean, we traveled through time by walking from one spot to another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it happens to work out that the three spaces, the two spaces that we use for the second and third act in our theater are very close to what they're supposed to be in the play. The second act is they're in a kind of a converted warehouse that they're rehearsing in, and the third act they're in kind of a proper proscenium theater, which is what we have.
Well, and my friend, very theatrical friend of mine that accompanied me to the play, She was commenting on how the story evolves and evolves and how not only the story evolves but how we as humanity adjust and how we keep carrying it on and carrying it on. I mean, there's this one scene in the second act where there's a TV and you have to put a candle in the TV to make it look like there's a real TV when there's not. And she made the comment, this is like the old Vic. You know, it's like Shakespearean times when everybody just gathered around and, you know, it's like a throwback and it's almost like we devolved, but we're still telling stories to help us cope. And what stories do we know? Well, Simpsons has been on for 25 years, right?
Right.
Okay. So I have to talk to the actors at this point. Okay.
If you must.
For one thing, how the hell did you learn all those lines? I had a play in Fringe in the Fringe Festival, you know, 45 minutes. I barely could remember my own lyrics, all right? I don't know how you guys did it. I mean, when you first came on the project, did you say, oh, my God?
Well, did you read the script? I didn't have the script before.
Oh, really?
I actually was very intimidated by the first song in the third act because it's 20 pages. And it's been so long since I've done any musical things. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, my Lord, I better start right now. Like, I started literally like the day I got it because I was like, I just need time with this. But I think Eric has the most...
I do have a ton of lines.
Yeah. Eric, you...
I mean, you have a lot. No.
You totally blew me away, man. Yeah. I have to step up my game after watching this.
Thank you. That's very kind. The first act was developed... Well, the whole play was developed with a cast of actors that the characters in the play are named after. And the first act is probably the most difficult to memorize because a lot of it is transcribed directly from, I think... improvisations that the actors who originally played the roles.
They took the original actors just into a basement somewhere and said, okay, let's talk about this episode. And so it's literally an almost word-for-word transcription of these actors sitting down describing what they remember of that episode of The Simpsons.
Of the Cape Fear episode of The Simpsons, right.
So, you know, as a result, there's a lot of interjections and yeah-yeahs and uhs. Those can be challenging to memorize. Mm-hmm.
I don't want to give away too much, but but the last scene, it's an operetta. All of a sudden... Mm-hmm. I mean, the masks are great. The costumes are awesome, you know, and musical. You guys have to be really well-rounded to do this kind of thing.
Yeah, we reached into our toolbox for everything that's in there.
And you have to be able to handle stress pretty well, I think.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I think the multitasking, I mean, I know, like, at one point when I'm back in the boat and I'm trying to put a gag on myself, I'm also trying to sing like an opera thing from behind there, and then the gag will get caught in my nose and it's like I'll be like, oh! It's ridiculous. Like it's pretty, you have to be able to multitask, and I think, and just be okay with that, you know?
It really is three entirely different shows.
It is.
You've got an intimate play in the first act, you've got like a song and dance musical in the second act, and you have a full operetta in act three, which is act three is 82 years after the apocalypse, and this is how their stories have evolved.
Right.
Giant game of telephone.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. That's perfect because it's because the first and second, well, they kind of refined it themselves during that 7 years of after the apocalypse. They kind of refined it themselves, and what's interesting is the whole payment system. You want to talk about the payment system, because that is a direct comment on what's wrong with America, in my estimation.
It is one of the more interesting things about the plays is I enjoy how it's kind of like how they talk about how copyright has essentially survived the apocalypse.
Yeah.
There are several groups of troops traveling through the land and performing plays, performing staged adaptations of old television shows. And not just The Simpsons. They talk about how there are other groups doing other things.
The
West Wing, and they trade in dialogue that's remembered from television shows. So they talk about how, we've acquired the rights, essentially, to do this episode, and we have a line that somebody remembered that they didn't have when they were doing it. So we're going to do this episode, but we're going to do it better because we've acquired this line of dialogue that someone remembered being in the episode.
Right.
So it's just an interesting evolution of, I mean, of copyright. It's weird how something like that
devolution would survive. Of copyright. although we, you know, we constantly have problems. I mean, somebody just sued someone. CBS just sued someone for putting up a picture of a TV show. This is news from like yesterday. CBS sued someone for putting up a picture of a TV show, a screenshot of a TV show from 50 some years ago.
Jeez.
Right?
Wow.
Yeah. 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 CBS sued and said, you cannot put up that picture. And I'm going, well, that fits perfectly into one of the subplots of Mr. Burns.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're still holding on to that. Like, we own the rights to do this show, and so you aren't going to do it.
Whatever happened to Creative Commons in the future?
Apparently not. Apparently they've chose to hold on to a lot of the old ways.
Okay, yeah. So let's talk about Anne Washburn. How did you guys... you guys grabbed this show. I mean, did you have to negotiate with her? Did you meet her? I mean, what a interesting individual she is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like 3 years ago, 3-4 years ago, I was in New York for the New York Fringe Festival, and someone had sent me a first copy, production copy of the show that was done in D.C. and then in New York, and they're like, you should read this. I think you would like this. And I read it. I thought, this is amazing. I actually wrote to Anne, and she was lovely. And she, you know, invited me to come meet with her.
Nice.
And we had a lovely little chat in a community garden by a beehive in Brooklyn.
By a beehive.
Yeah,
by what's the buzz?
Hey. we just chatted, and we chatted about a whole bunch of other things, and she was telling me that, like, because it just had its off-Broadway run and it was huge, and then it was going to do a round at the Guthrie Theater in Minneapolis, mm-hmm. and from there ACT, which is in San Francisco, right. Which is she wanted to see how it played in these larger theaters,
right?
And then we can see about you know, me acquiring the rights for this tiny little theater in Los Angeles. And I just put it away. I put it away for a while. And then...
3 years later.
3 years later, I was in Paris, and I got a phone call from my theater company, and we had been trying to get the rights, and it kind of fell back into my lap. And here we are.
The LA professional premiere.
Yeah, and it was such a joy and such a chore to do this show, because it is a beast. It is, there's so many different things going on, and the actors had to learn things that they would never expect. I had actors who had to learn the squeeze box, and actors who had to like play guitar like they've never played before, and play bells while they're doing, you know, they're singing. And
that's a unique thing to our production too. It's not necessarily written that all the actors are also the musicians, but that's how we chose to put it together. Is we wanted this troupe to feel like they were their little troupe, and they are everything. The actors play the instruments, and they sing, and they perform. So when we get to that big third act climax where we're seeing how this has all evolved, you know, we really wanted it to feel like, this is their little scrappy traveling band.
So Jamie, you put this together, and then how did Brian get involved?
Brian is like my Robert Evans. So without the, without the leopard skin, I don't know.
We've done how many years together now?
Like six or seven.
Seven or eight.
He's produced 7 or 8 of my shows, so we kind of have this language. He gets my shorthand. I get his shorthand, And so, yeah, he's used to the way I work, and I know how to rely on him. He knows how to rely on me.
And we're used to tackling challenges like this together.
Yeah, we don't do simple shows, and this is the least simple show I think I've ever had to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
All right, so tell us a little bit about the specifics. What are you playing? How long does it run for?
We run now through November 18th currently. We're running Fridays, Saturdays at 8, Sundays at 7 at the Broadwater.
That's the name of the complex.
The name of the complex
is
the Broadwater.
It's newly rechristened, but it's Sacred Fools Theater Company at the mm-hmm. Broadwater.
Santa Monica and Vine in Hollywood.
Right, right. And hang out at the three clubs afterwards where, all us fringe people partied after our Hollywood fringe thing. Actors, what did you think about the fact that you had to be so eclectic? I mean, acting, singing, playing.
That was the reason why I wanted to do it.
All right.
Well, and I didn't know about the handbells, but I'm really excited. I know how to play a B and an E now together. So I could be in any
Eric?
Christmas caroling.
Oh, I've got some mad glockenspiel skills now.
Sure do.
I never thought I'd have.
Cool.
Yeah.
I think that was the most fun, I think, is to be able to do so many different styles of theater within one show. I mean, usually those would be all different shows.
Yeah, three different shows.
All
like you guys
said. It's so fun and difficult.
If our listeners want to find out more, is there a site that they can go to?
Yeah, you can go to the Sacred Fools website. It's sacredfools.org.
Terrific.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you all for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian Wallace. Jamie Robledo.
Yeah.
Eric Curtis Johnson.
Thank you.
And Dagny Kerr.
Thank you so much
for joining us. I just love the show. I'm going to see it again.
Awesome. Oh,
thank you.
And that's it for tonight's edition of Digital Village. Be sure to tune in next week. We're going to be back another week.
Oh, my God.